Brian has some things he doesn't want you to miss.
That's right. I'm here for it.
All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Julie Fedorchak with the Public Service Commission. We're gathered on the 12th floor of the State Capitol for a regularly scheduled commission meeting. Today is October 15th, and I will call this commission meeting to order. 14th. Yes, it is the 14th. I'm going by the number of days away from my husband's 50th birthday. That's how I know the date. You're right. It's Friday. His birthday is Friday. Okay. Just before we get started, we have a relatively straightforward agenda this morning, but before we get started, I just have a couple opening comments. This morning, the Interim Energy Development Committee requested an update from the Public Service Commission, so I thought I'd share some of the information that I shared with them as opening comments as well, because I think it's worthwhile information to get out, and that is they requested that we report on the status of renewable electricity sales in North Dakota, renewable energy electricity sales in North Dakota. This is something they're tracking because they set out in 2007 a 10% renewable energy objective for North Dakota, and they want to see where we are as of 2015. And where we are, I have the latest numbers as of 2014, and in 2014, North Dakota electricity customers purchased 2.6 million megawatt hours of renewable energy. That's 16% of the total electricity sales in North Dakota came from renewable sources. That is a significant increase in the past decade, increasing from almost a negligible amount up to a full 16% of the electricity sales in the state are now coming, or in 2014 came from renewable sources. So at the same time, it's important to note that the carbon dioxide emissions from electric generation also dropped 15% in North Dakota. And I tie these two together because I think it points to what we have been saying at the commission, that the EPA's Clean Power Plan, as they propose, is not the only way to reduce carbon dioxide emissions. We're proving in North Dakota that you can do this with incentives and innovation, and it's having a real noticeable effect, a 15% reduction in the last decade of our carbon dioxide emissions. So the legislature was pretty interested in these figures. We also reported that in total, North Dakota generated 36 million megawatt hours of power in 2014. We consumed a total of 16 million megawatt hours of power. So doing the simple math, that's at 20 million megawatt hours of power that were exported to other locations. Also interesting to note, of that total 36 million megawatt hours of power, 6 million megawatt hours of power were renewable. So we consumed 2.6 million megawatt hours of renewable power in the state, and the remainder, the balance of that, which would be 3.4 million megawatt hours, were sold out of state as well. So these are, energy production, electricity generation is a significant industry in North Dakota. We're providing power to a lot of other places, and it's good, reliable, affordable power that is really valuable to our neighboring states. And we're hopeful here that the EPA is going to tone down some of their regulations that as they proposed, or that the courts are going to rein them in order to allow this kind of energy production to continue in North Dakota so we can continue to be an exporter of good, clean, reliable, affordable power to all of the Midwest regions that we serve. So that kind of concludes my comments there, and we'll probably be doing a news release on this information later as well that'll kind of spell it out in more details. But that really was only my only opening comments, and I'll pass the torch over to Commissioner Crispin for his.
Well, I'll just add to what you were saying regarding clean power plan issues and say that your points about the additional wind generation that was added in the last decade, Sadly, though, we don't get credit for that in pursuing the goals or the requirements that EPA has mandated for the state. They exclude that, and in calculating our rate, we can't count those megawatt hours into the blend. And I know I've heard some folks say, well, you know, so we just need to get Congress to adjust that or something like that. But sadly, you know, this wasn't an accident. They worked very hard on doing exactly what they intend to do. And so this is a reality we can't just overlook and assume it was some kind of a mistake and that will all be corrected. That kind of assumption gets us to the other point I was going to make this morning. Because the lignite industry, and working, I think, in, to some extent with the state government, has done such a phenomenal job over a couple of decades of meeting emission standards on other things, such as mercury and sulfur and nitrous oxides and things such as that. It seems like we've sort of been lulled into a sense that plant closings are something that happen in Appalachia and places like that, and it could just never happen here. But as we move forward with the preparation for the impacts of the Clean Power Plan, since our last meeting, some of the realities have started to strike, and I think to the extent that some daily papers around the state last summer accused North Dakota elected officials of a sky is falling mentality because of our reaction to the Clean Power Plan. I think the days since our last meeting have really shown that paper is wrong, and state officials have been right, because in these last 2 weeks, I'm looking at a press release here that Xcel Energy is going to close two of their coal-fired plants in Minnesota, and that will certainly have an impact on many North Dakota ratepayers and the places served by Xcel. And yesterday I had to go to a funeral in the morning, so I didn't get to attend all of the Empower meeting over in Bismarck, over at BSC. I was there in the afternoon. I didn't hear this, but reading in the Bismarck Tribune, they report that the model plan developed by EPA for North Dakota suggests closing two power plants and units of two others by 2018, those four being the Heskett plant in Mandan, the Coyote station near Beulah, one unit of the Milton R. Young station near Center, and one unit of the Coal Creek station near Underwood. And I think those of us in this agency that are involved with making sure that the lights stay on for North Dakotans, and you think of a smaller plant like Heskett, you know, could we work around that? You know, there's probably ways over the course of some period of time. In this case, we're talking about just over 2 years. But when you think of plants like the Coyote station and one of the Milton R. Young stations and one of the Coal Creek stations, these are stunning developments that show that, if anything, as elected officials last summer when this plan came out, if we were off in our reaction to it, it was that we were underreacting, not overreacting.
Thank you, Commissioner Crispin. Two other things I mentioned to the Legislative Committee on the Clean Power Plan, and this is based on a letter we sent to the governor's office with comments, and that is that our calculations show that if you were to go with a mass-based approach and just run our plants as they are today and pay the carbon, basically the carbon tax, at $30 a ton, which is what the EPA is estimating the cost will be in their own plan, that would cost North Dakota ratepayers $375 million annually. Well, it would cost the companies, the utilities, and then those would be spread across to the customers. So $375 million annually to do business as it is done today in North Dakota. And if you took a rate-based calculation and tried to meet the EPA's requirements, you would need to shut down 700 megawatts of coal-fired generation and replace it with almost 5,000 megawatts of wind, which if you base it on the costs of the two most recent farms we've approved, wind generation facilities, it would cost an estimated $8.6 billion for that wind power, and it would cover nearly 1 million acres of land in North Dakota, 1 million more acres of land. So these are some of the realities that North Dakotans need to be aware of and to consider clearly in their opinion of this plan and whether this is the right approach for our state and our nation, or whether the EPA needs to go back to the drawing board and or Congress needs to go back and settle this matter, because they are the policy-making branch of government, not regulatory agencies. So two other points that we made this morning down to the Energy Committee. Commissioner Kolk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The your stats about 1 million acres of land, that's what really jumped out at me this morning. I mean, trying to visualize 1 million acres, that's 1 million of anything is a lot. And you start thinking of the other cumulative impacts of 1 million acres of land, impact to crop sprayers, impact to birds, impact to eagles, impact to all these other things. I think people really have to understand what that means. And with the way the power is moved around, I mean, most of that power that will be added will leave North Dakota. So it's not to our benefit, if you will, in the sense that you will make some money in the power, but these states that are so, we want all this energy no matter what the cost, they're not willing to put up 1 million acres of wind towers in their states. So I think that's some of the state-to-state discussion that will play out. So I thought that was very good testimony this morning. The kind of dovetail on that a little bit. I think my colleagues laid out really well what we're doing in the state, but I'm going to throw out next week, I just found out this morning I'm going to go out to D.C. on Tuesday and Wednesday and meet with some senators about crafting some language in the energy bill that gives carbon capture and utilization the same kind of treatment as we do for wind, meaning that the wind policy right now, if wind is running, it has to go into the power markets. So if we can get something out there where if coal is running that's utilizing the CO2, it also is a must-run resource to try to levelize some of these policies. So you've got the regulators talking about the impact to rates. You've got the legal thing going on. But also, too, we need to find a path forward for coal no matter what happens in this thing. And I still maintain that utilizing the CO2 for oil recovery or something else is a good idea. But continue the discussion about getting policies put into place that will help that as the technologies come online. So, you know, 20 years from now, hopefully we beat back some of these EPA regs, but we're still able to utilize our coal for electricity and do other byproducts like we've been doing at Dakota Gas for decades. So that'll be interesting next week. And then finally, perhaps the most important thing about October 14th, today is Sauerkraut Day in Wishick.
Yes.
It's the 90th anniversary. So, Nick, if you're looking for a hot story, get a reporter down there right away. I'm sure Dave's already been down there this morning. But it is the 90th anniversary of Sauerkraut Days.
It's a little early
to have that. Oh, it's never too early for sauerkraut, Nick. That's all I have, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Kolk. And this is 2 years in a row that we have had a commission meeting on Sauerkraut Days.
You've got to
we
do
need
a better
to be
job
getting their schedule ahead of time so we can go down there and have some red wieners and sauerkraut.
That's what we canceled the informal this afternoon, isn't it?
Hey, that thing is pretty much wrapped up by 1 o'clock.
No.
All right.
Daryl, make a note of that.
I will make a note.
All right. Thank you. We have just two items on consent this morning. Tony Roden wants an auctioneer's license, and one other person wants to cancel theirs. So I move passage of those items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right. Thanks, Daryl. Okay, moving into the regular agenda, I have two items, both pipeline related. First, I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order in NST Express LLC 12-inch crude oil pipeline McKenzie County siting application case number PU-15-232.
Second.
This is an application that NST Express filed for a 23-mile, 12-inch diameter pipeline and associated facilities for a crude transmission crude oil line in McKenzie County. We received this application in May. We had the hearing in on September 10th, and everything was pretty straightforward, so we were able to turn this one around fairly quickly. The project will, as I said, consist of 23 miles of 12-inch diameter pipeline. The maximum operating pressure of this line will be 1440 pounds per square inch, and the project will provide a maximum flow rate of 100,000 barrels per day. This project involves the NST Express Alexander facility, which will consist of four. It's a gathering facility. This is new. It will be consist of four truck offload skids, up to six pipeline connections, up to 150 barrels of tank storage, a tank booster and a mainline pump, a pig launcher and a turbine meter run. Additional interconnection facilities will be constructed within the NST Transload East Fairview facility. So the pipeline will start at the NST Express Alexander facility, a gathering area north of Alexander, and it will travel a little bit south and west to the NST Transload East Fairview facility, which is a rail facility. It will include a pig launcher, turbine meter, piping to interconnect with existing tanks, and equipment and panels for the SCADA system. Five mainline valves will be located along the pipeline, one mainline valve within the Alexander facility, one within the East Fairview rail facility, two automated valves near the Yellowstone River crossing, and one manual valve along the pipeline. The project will be designed, constructed, and operated and maintained in compliance with the Code of Federal Regulations, Title 49, Part 195, Hazardous Liquids Pipeline Safety Regulations. The total cost of the project is estimated to be $60 million. 11 state and federal agencies were contacted by the company, and their comments were incorporated into the design and application process. The State Historical Preservation Office has concurred with the determination that no significant sites will be affected. The construction, operation, and maintenance of the project will not impact any exclusion areas. The project will be located within 500 feet of two occupied residences, and NST has obtained the waivers from those affected owners. No other avoidance areas will be impacted. NST Express testified that a SCADA system will be installed as part of the project, which will monitor pressure flow and temperature 24 hours per day, 7 days a week. The control center and the control center will have the ability to remotely shut down the project. With respect to the Yellowstone River crossing, NST testified that the high definition drill design and installation will comply with the requirements set forth in the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Section 10 permit. So they have to get a Section 10 permit from the Corps for this. They also testified that the pipe will be installed a minimum of 50 feet below the bottom of the Yellowstone River. They also testified that they will retain inspectors to ensure compliance with environmental and safety requirements during project construction, and they will participate in the North Dakota One Call excavation system. So, kind of in summary, this project is a 23-mile pipeline in the heart of the Bakken. Will have the capacity to handle 100,000 barrels per day, and they hope to be operational by October of 2016. It is going to have a significant impact on trucks off the road, because currently this oil is being transported by truck, and it will connect to the facility in East Alexander that will have be able to reach markets on all the different refineries via rail and pipeline. So it's a good strategic location for this endpoint. The company had a number of new technologies that they're incorporating that I hadn't seen before in a pipeline, and one of them was an ARO coating, which is an addition to the epoxy bond coating on the pipeline. This is in the section going under the river. This additional coating helps prevent any damage that might occur during the the boring process, and it was just one additional step, some new technology that companies are looking at to minimize potential environmental impact. The company also, noteworthy item was that they said they will not be constructing during the winter. And another thing they incorporated that I hadn't heard before was, in terms of reclamation, they videotaped the entire line before so that they have an accurate copy, an accurate picture of what their restoration should look like post-construction. So those were some items that I thought were worth noting and bringing forward regarding the company's application to show that these companies are continually trying to improve their processes and improve the use the latest and greatest technologies available for construction and operation. And they also want to double state that the Yellowstone River crossing was 50 feet below the river. They have a core permit, and they will have block valves on both sides of the river. They also provided in their hearing one of the best illustrations of a river crossing, and I invite our members of the media to look at this if you choose to. But in one document, it shows where they enter, it shows the overview, it shows the underview, it shows where they're entering and exiting, it shows the depth under the river, and it shows all the different, shows the soil profile as well, all in this one document. So it was really a good visual to better understand how they're going to be crossing the river. And then again, to show the location of the line, this is Alexander right here. The line will be starting about 8 miles north of Alexander at this gathering facility, and will travel south and west to the North Star Express East Fairview Rail Loading Facility, just on the border of North Dakota and Montana.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Okay, my next item, I move the Commission deem complete the applications for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit, and further move the Commission issue a notice of filings and public hearing in Sakakawea Pipeline Company, LLC, 12-inch crude oil pipeline, Montreal County, citing application case number PU-15-670.
Second.
Not to be confused with the other Sakakawea Pipeline application we are working on right now. This is a new application that this company has just submitted to us. This is for an 8-mile pipeline. They submitted their application to us earlier in September. It's an 8-mile, 12-inch diameter crude oil pipeline and associated facilities in Montreal County, North Dakota. We'll be setting a hearing for this project later in the admin portion of the meeting. And basically, this pipeline will connect the Palermo Rail Facility and the Enbridge Crude Oil Terminal. It'll provide a capacity of 800,000 barrels per day. The project cost is $18 million. And this, too, will provide access to multiple refinery markets throughout the U.S. The rail facility is owned by Phillips 66, which the Palermo Rail Facility is owned by Phillips 66, which is also a partner in the Sakakawea Pipeline Company. So that's how that is all connected. So we'll set the hearing date for this project and be heading out to, let's see, where will we be going? Probably Stanley for a hearing on this project.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And that concludes my portfolio. Commissioner Christman.
RC1, I move the Commission approve revision number 3030 to surface coal mining permit number KRSB 8802 held by Dakota Westmoreland Corporation for the Beulah Mine to update the business entity, compliance, and property ownership information and operations and reclamation plans for the next 5-year permit term.
Second.
Dakota Westmoreland filed the application for Revision 30 on June 25th of this year. This revision updates information for the next 5-year permit term. Approval of the revision will be in conjunction with the approval of renewal number 5 And so the following information, so I don't have to repeat it all twice, applies to this revision and also to agenda item RC2, the corresponding renewal. Permit 8802 here contains 4,905.9 acres located in all or portions of 7 sections in Mercer County and 6 sections in Oliver County, south of Beulah. Coal removal has been completed from this permit area, but the final reclamation of portions of the permit east of State Highway 49 remains to be completed. This permit area also contains the shop office complex, the coal handling facility, and the haul roads and support active mining operations in this permit area. The surety bond in this case covers this permit and the current bond amount of $10,383,000, just under that, is sufficient to cover the current worst-case reclamation condition in this permit. Dakota Westmoreland published notices of the renewal and revision applications in the Bismarck Tribune, the Center Republican, and the Hazen Star. We also sent notices to the affected landowners, the appropriate agencies, and advisory committee members as required. No objections to the application were received. The Reclamation Division has completed its review of this application and recommends that it be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC2, I move the commission approve renewal number 5 to surface coal mining permit number KRSB-8802 held by Dakota Westmoreland Corporation for the Beulah Mine to extend the permit term another 5 years until October 23rd of 2020.
Second.
Again, approval of this renewal is necessary in order for Dakota Westmoreland to continue mining related activities and reclamation operations within the permit area until October of 2020. The details of this renewal were already discussed in the preceding agenda item, approving the revisions to the permit.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I don't have any particular comments about this motion, but maybe, Randy, we should get Westmoreland to come in sometime and tell us their plans going forward with bigger issues they're dealing with, the future of the mine and how this will all play out. And we keep 5 years from now, it'll be interesting to see what their business is like, just to get a feel for it, because I get that question once in a while.
Yeah, they certainly are in a state of change there right now, so yeah. We can look into that.
How that affects their renewals. And I mean, this is all fine, I'm sure, but just down the road, how that's all going to wrap up with, we might actually get to do reclamation and some of that big sale stuff. Mm-hmm.
Didn't they get a new contract recently, too, or an extension?
For the Heskett station, but hopefully that doesn't close by 2018.
Yeah, that's
true. In the paper this morning.
Point. Yeah. Okay.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, RC3, I move the commission approve revision number 7 to surface coal mining permit number GRGR-0501 held by Leonardite Products, LLC, to identify the next 5-year Leonardite removal sub-area and to update the legal environmental resources operation and reclamation permit sections for the next 5-year permit term. I also move the approval of collateral bond LC-GRGR-0501-03 to increase the bond amount for this permit area.
Second.
On July 8th of this year, Leonardite Products filed the application for revision number 7, identifying the next 5-year Leonardite removal sub-area and updating the information for the next 5-year permit term. The following information, as I did on items 1 and 2, the following information applies to this revision and also to agenda item RC4, which is the corresponding renewal. This permit covers portions of 2 quarter sections of land in Williams County containing 111.15 acres. And for the record, leonardite is oxidized lignite. And the mining operations are expected to continue within the permit area through 2021. Leonardite Products requested variances from the 180-day backfilling and grading rule and also from the 3-year contemporaneous reclamation requirement. The Reclamation Division recommends approval of the variances based on the type of mining operation, the slow pit progression, and justification provided by Leonardite Products in the application. Revision number 7 also updated the worst-case reclamation cost estimate for determining the minimum bond amount for this Stony Creek mine. These changes resulted in an increase in the required bond amount. Leonardite Products submitted a new collateral bond that requires commission approval along with the approval of Revision 7. That's why there were two parts to the motion. The new collateral bond will replace the current bond. The total bond amount for this permit was just over $170,000. The new minimum bond amount increases to $281,359. Leonardite Products submitted a collateral bond that is supported by an irrevocable standby letter of credit issued by the First National Bank and Trust Company of Williston. Staff has reviewed the collateral bond documents and found that they have been properly executed. Leonardite Products also submitted a stipulation to reduce the existing collateral bond from $170,000 and 125 acres to $0 and 0 acres, effectively canceling that bond. The stipulation to reduce that bond was also properly executed, and that only requires the portfolio holder's signature for approval. Leonardite Products submitted the affidavit of publication for the newspaper notice indicating that it was published in the Williston Herald for 4 consecutive weeks. We notified the appropriate agencies, the affected landowners, and the advisory committee members. We received no comments or objections for this revision application or the renewal application that follows. Reclamation Division has completed its review of this revision application and recommends its approval.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
In RC4, I move the commission approve renewal number 2 to surface coal mining permit number GRGR-0501 held by Leonardite Products, LLC, to extend the permit term for another 5 years until November 2nd, 2020.
Second.
Leonardite Products applied for this permit renewal to continue mining and reclamation operations through that November date in 2021. The details of this renewal were already discussed in the preceding agenda item approving the revisions to the permit. The Reclamation Division has completed its review of the 5-year permit renewal application and respectfully recommends its approval.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Sherry didn't even have to get nervous over there with no questions or anything. Okay, my last agenda item, RC5. I move the commission adopt an order in case number RC-15-605, notice of violation number 1503 issued to BNI Coal Limited at the Center Mine, to affirm the violation, assess a penalty, and close the case upon payment of the penalty.
Second.
This violation number 1503 was issued to BNI for conducting topsoil removal and stockpiling operations in the section line right-of-way prior to obtaining Oliver County Commission approval to close the section line. During a July 9th inspection, Bill Gunnarsson noticed the topsoil removal and stockpiling had taken place. Then just under a month later, on August 6th, the Oliver County Commission granted approval to close the section line, and that became effective on September 10th. the commission needs to assess a penalty, to assess a civil penalty, and adopt an order in this matter because BNI did not request an informal conference or a formal hearing. The commission considers the following four factors in determining the amount of any civil penalty: the history of previous violations, the seriousness, negligence, and number four, good faith in attempting to achieve compliance. So on the first one, BNI does not have a history of violations. It requires a penalty to be assessed, so the recommended penalty assessment for history is zero. On the second one, this violation did not cause any environmental damage, but it did cause potential impact to the public. Public safety, though, was not an issue, so a $250 penalty based on seriousness is warranted. On the third one, on negligence, the commission may assess a civil penalty of up to $3,000 per day based on the degree of the fault of the permittee. However, a violation caused by negligence but not through recklessness, knowing, or willful conduct may be assessed a penalty of up to only $1,500 per day. The Reclamation Division did request that BNI obtain a document approval from the Oliver County Commission to close that section line already in February in the pre-renewal review letter. So a $750 penalty based on negligence due to lack of diligence is warranted. And the fourth consideration, no deduction can be made for normal compliance, which means abatement of the violation within the time set for abatement. The Oliver County Commission approved to close the section line effective September 10th of 2015. And as I said, the incident was already found in July, so a deduction for good faith is not warranted in this case. This order affirms NOV 1503 and assesses a civil penalty in the amount of $1,000. Again, that's $250 for seriousness, $750 for negligence, and this order also closes the case upon payment of the penalty.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Randy, just one quick question on this. When was the NOV issued? Do you know the date?
I do not have the date.
Was it just after the July 9th inspection, shortly thereafter?
I'm sure it was.
It was near the end of July.
Okay. Okay, thanks, Jim.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
And that concludes my portfolio.
Thank you, Randy. All right, Commissioner Culk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two items today. Item BK1. I move the commission assess a filing fee of $10,000, suspend the tariff filing, and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Northern State Power Company's Renewable Energy Rider Rates Case Number PU15-683.
Second.
Thank you, Julie. In October of this year, NSP filed a request for approval of its renewable energy rider for recovering cost from its electric ratepayers associated with North Dakota electric generation wind farms. The proposed charge would add about 0.001014 cents per kilowatt, or about a dollar per month for a customer using 1,000 kilowatts. The two wind farms that are now in the mix are 150 megawatts of Border Winds, which is nearing completion actually this year, hopefully, and the Courtney Wind Farm, which is 200 megawatts, which is actually the groundbreaking was last weekend. So this sets out that anyone wishing to request a formal hearing must do so by November 30th of this year, and if not, the commission could deal with this in a informal. A little background on this case. This is the first of these we've ever seen for NSP because now they actually have resources in North Dakota. So we've done this for Otter Tail, for their Laverne Wind Farm, plus a couple others, but this is the first time we'll see it for XL. The one thing that I would put out there, that the cost, you know, roughly a dollar a month for 1,000 kilowatts, it's really interesting how these tariffs, where these riders lay themselves out, that this is not an extra dollar a month for wind generation. This is what it costs for this wind. You accumulate all the costs. But what's different is if this is a – we don't have riders set out for a for a natural gas that makes electricity or coal that makes electricity. So this is not an additional cost for wind, but we always have to remind ourselves that, you know, this is a cost of wind when it's running. So it replaces a different cost, which usually is something that's a little bit higher, but it still has to be backed up for base load. So that's one of the things that I'll want to flush out in the actual informal or the formal that's requested, because as we had, you know, earlier this morning, we talked about the wind coming in, and you know, wind, there's some very good pros or some cons, but it still has to be backed up by something else. So when you look at this cost, I just want to make sure we get the right message out there. That's not an extra dollar a month for wind. That's what it costs for these projects, which will displace other projects. But there's a cost in there that still has to be figured out about how much the wind needs to be backed up with the base load. So probably flush that out in the informal.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just to further clarify that and make sure that I'm understanding it correctly too, but this is we approved this renewable energy rider in our settlement agreement.
We provided ADPs saying we would allow them cost recovery for these two wind farms.
Plus, we did that, but we did give them this renewable energy rider in 2014 settlement agreement. They got the ability or the authority to create a rider for the renewable energy projects. And if I'm remembering the logic of that, it was because these projects are not included in the base rates. So these projects coming on board, it allows the company to track the costs and true them up on an annual basis versus estimating what the costs are going to be, putting them in base rates, and then having that set over time. Because in talking with Mike Diller, he thinks that these riders are a good idea for renewable energy projects because the costs decreased over time, and it allows those decreases to be reflected in rates to customers. They're front-ended a little bit on the beginning years, and then over time they decline. And so truing them up every year assures the customers are paying more the actual costs of the projects versus what the company is estimating in a base rate case. And so I think that the Otter Tail has this for a number of different wind projects in their system, and we set the parameters pretty tight on what can be included in this renewable energy rider. Some projects that exist in Minnesota that we don't necessarily think are cost effective are not, and so these are the first two projects being added to this this rider, and they both are in North Dakota, which is an added bonus.
I think you explained that wonderfully. The the rate impacts they filed, the first 5-6 years are about what we put in this motion today. But then over the life of this thing, by the time you're out into 2030, 2038, the actual price is predicted to go negative on some of the things. So, well, who knows what the future will bring, but that's the way you explain it is exactly correct. So I appreciate that.
Well, the other thing I think will be interesting to walk through in the informal hearing is in their application, the company included a pretty interesting attachment on the production tax credits and how much the estimate they'll be receiving, and how much that reduces the revenue requirement. And that's just a conversation that I haven't really been able to get to with the companies in the past, so I look forward to being able to ask them about that.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right, thank you, Daryl. And finally, item BK2. I move the commission acknowledge the October 1st, 2015 electronic submittal of the 2016 Pipeline Safety One Call Grant application in the amount of $10,000 to the U.S. Department of Transportation Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, Washington, D.C., for the development and conduct of a damage prevention awareness campaign. Public Service Commission 2016 One Call Grant application, case number GS15666.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. This is just, I always like to get the awareness out there that, you know, that we throw stones at the federal government all the time, and sometimes they do a pretty good job. And in the way we work with them in PHMSA, in this particular case, helping us increase our public awareness campaign, they provide us $10,000 that we go buy some billboards and do some other things with the One Call folks to get the awareness out there of, you know, the call before you dig. And also, last meeting we had, it was a $394,000 that is going to be recouped from the Public Service Commission from PHMSA for the operation of part of our program. So I think we really do a good job of working with PHMSA on the running of the program. We can always get better, of course, but just I wanted to highlight that. And on that, yesterday, Victor and I were in a meeting for what, a couple, 3 hours with the One Call band is put back together again, the one that we put together here 4 years ago going into the session and 2 years ago going into the session about potential changes to the One Call law are being thrown around. And you know, right now I don't know that we need any particular changes, but there was certainly a lot of discussion in the last legislative session about removing the flags, about paying for second locates, about whitelining. So the group has gotten back together to lay out which issues are important, to see if we can get collaboration amongst this group. And if there is changes that go in, they go in as a package that we could all agree on instead of trying to, you know, beat each other up in legislative sessions. So I'm glad this group has gotten back together again. And really, I didn't hear anything yesterday that I hadn't heard before. I think it really comes down to is that we got to keep running the program, keep getting the awareness out there. But one thing that is interesting is we've been talking about call before you dig for so long. We're talking about now it's call before you dig, dig safely, and remove your flags. So front page of the paper, Nick, that's what we need. But I think that's where we're at right now is people are calling. Everybody's calling. So we got all these locates out there, but then they have to still dig safely, which we've seen cases in front of us that they call, but they don't dig safely. And one of the things that really came out the last session was we're calling before we dig, then we're digging safely, then we got flags all over the whole state. So it's just part of the ongoing discussion. And so I always use the opportunity to trump that drum. So thank you, Madam Chair.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just two points. Call before you dig in the area where you're calling, dig safely, and remove the flags.
Right, good point.
And then I wondered, did the committee approve the Calk Before You Dig campaign?
Yes, we're working on a special logo of Calk Before You Dig. I have a hard hat with myself and a shovel, and then Victor in the background saying, like, no. But it is interesting, the dialogue, where we've come in the last 5-6 years, and there's a lot of passion out there. Our friend from Verendry Electric, Tom Rafferty, was there with his concerns. And quite honestly, one of the things that was thrown out yesterday is that the PSC should have a mandatory minimum fine. And I said, well, I don't like that idea off the cuff. I said, I'd run that by my colleagues. But we've got some groups that are afraid we're going to be too heavy-handed and other groups that don't think we're heavy-handed enough when it comes to levying out the fines. And I said, we look at each case based on the merits and really walk them through about the process. They thought, well, when someone files a complaint with the PSC, you should have a decision in a month. I said, well, these folks have rights, too. We serve the complaint. They have X amount of days to come back. If they request a hearing, we have to go through the hearing process. You can't rush the due process. And so that was, I think, helpful to get that out there. But it was very interesting of the issues that came out. The white lining was a hot topic a few years ago, and that one sounded like something that might actually be able to go forward because the groups that were against, you know, the white lining, where they're going to excavate before, I don't think are as against it anymore because technology has advanced to where they could do the, you know, almost like the virtual white line, put it on some GIS data or put it electronically where they don't have to travel all the way across the state to draw a white line. They could put it on the map. And so that might be something that comes out of this that I think would be a win-win for everyone because I always thought white lining was a pretty good idea, and the pipeline companies would think that too, but the amount of time it takes to drive all over the state and put these out there was the biggest detractor, but now I think technology may have solved some of that. So we'll see where it goes.
I can't imagine how those white lines get translated to the guy on the excavator.
Well, that was some of the discussion.
Without a lot of potential room for error.
Well, they talked about, you know, you're right, the guy and the gal running the backhoe is maybe doesn't have the technology, but, you know, they could have the app right there and work through it. So we'll see where it goes, but I think it's why not use technology? And, you know, you figure you put crops in based on a GPS that puts the right amount of seed in the right spot there in other areas. So if you can do that with putting crops in the ground, you'd think you can do that with an excavator.
Program the excavator to automatically avoid the
why not
underground infrastructure.
I mean, fair enough. I mean, that's part of the fly some drones above it. With a Calk banner behind it. 2020 will be here before you know it. We'll be renewing those permits again.
Oh. Well, on the mandatory sentences, or mandatory fines, I should say, not sentences, that would certainly simplify the work for us, and it would speed things up if that's the goal, but that would clearly be a policy decision the legislature would need to be convinced of, and that would be an interesting debate.
No, exactly.
I mean, I like the flexibility we have, and I think we do, you know, a good job. We try to get done efficiently and look at all the different factors. But if the problem continues to grow and the owners of the infrastructure are feeling like what's being done isn't working, then the next step might be the mandatory fines.
And we talked a lot about, I still maintain the training and education piece is where you make your money at. And the County Bond Alliance, the One Call Board, the PSC, as well as the individual county managers, that whole collaboration, keep working together, I think is where the most opportunity is at. Because I still think it's only a small percentage of people out there that are causing the problems. Mm-hmm. Most folks are doing their best to do things right.
Absolutely. Okay.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Includes my portfolio, Madam Chair.
And just to clarify that the approval of that motion does not mean that Commissioner Crisman and I have approved the Cult Before You Dig campaign.
That will be on our next consent item.
All right. Let's see. I was going to pull out the advanced schedule and look at what we have coming up. We have a hearing here tomorrow and Friday scheduled with NSP for an advanced determination of prudence request on a Mankato Energy a power purchase agreement that the company has filed with us. So we'll be tied up with that the next couple of days. And then later this month, another pipeline hearing, discussion on alternative grain bond filings that is on the calendar that I'm hoping that we'll have to, actually I'm going to request that we change the date of that one.
I thought we did that.
I kind of thought we did too. But we'll have to look at that under admin. And then we're moving into NARUC in the early part of November. I know that both Commissioner Kalk and I will be there. And not a lot of hearings on the schedule for then, but I did notice we have a very brisk list of items under scheduling to deal with, so I'm sure our calendar will be filling up. Okay, do we have any questions?
Yeah, I was just wondering if you guys would be able to provide that information you said about the renewable stuff that
yes.
you presented this morning. I just wonder if I might be able to get a copy of that later or get it emailed to me.
Absolutely.
If I have any follow-up, I can check with you guys.
Okay.
I have an 11 I got to get to.
Absolutely.
Better hurry.
Thanks for coming, Nick.
In terms of, Commissioner Crisman, in terms of the BNI coal, was it a case that the company just jumped the gun?
On that NOV?
Yeah.
You know, since they didn't request a hearing, you know, we didn't have that opportunity to really flesh it out. But I think it was probably just a miscommunication probably somewhere along the line between the people out in the field and the office. And they just proceeded to do some stockpiling and that kind of work. And all the approval wasn't in yet.
Have they paid the fine?
No, I don't believe so, because we just said it now.
They haven't. You haven't had any communication. You couldn't have.
Correct. But the time had expired for them to request a formal hearing, though.
And you talked about putting a SCADA on things. It is a speed SCADA, or is it a figure SCADA?
I'm kind of biased to figure SCADAs.
Hockey skater.
If Kalk has anything to it, it would be hockey.
There's an NDSU cup up there. I have to stand up for whatever the heck we're going to be at UND, right?
Exactly.
So what are you going to? Are you going to vote?
You know,
I am going to vote.
I'm going to vote, and I think going for the Rough Riders.
Fair enough.
How about you?
I'm torn between that and the Sundogs since my name didn't make it.
Which was, what was your name?
Fighting Pomme de Terre.
Fighting what?
Pomme de Terre.
What is that?
Potato.
Oh. I'm shocked that that didn't just take hold of people and grip everyone and rise to the top.
My understanding is that had they gone to six alternatives on the ballot instead of five, that that probably would have been the six.
Either that or the rampaging russets.
Also a good potato.
The russets. That's a good one. Oh, all right.
On that note, I will throw out one of the clever comments I've seen on blogs over a long period of time occurred yesterday, and the discussion had to do with changing the name of Columbus Day by Fargo. And someone commented that it's lucky that the city to the north of them didn't do this, or they'd have probably had to change the name of their mall. And then it included a picture of the Columbia Mall. And then the next line was, and I think they're having enough trouble with renaming things up there.
Okay.
I had to get.
Thank you, Dave. All right. Well, we will adjourn for 10 minutes. Or do you want to go right through? I'm okay with either. I know you've got kind of a time.
I'd be okay with just going right through if no one needs a break.
I'm ready to run.
I'm fine with that, too.
I'm not sure on the... Can someone call Sue if we're going to look at rescheduling that session?
Sure.
We'll need her input.
Okay, so we'll move right...